Dude, so I was extremely craving ceviche earlier. So I went down to Mi Pueblo to get ceviche.
Yeah.
Got the chips, came back to my house, popped open the ceviche, started eating that. And I took your advice and I picked up the Black Label Valentina.
Of course.
My face felt like a freaking volcano. It was insane. Like,
really?
I probably ingested about a whole ounce of it. So that's probably, you know, part of it. Or 2 ounces, rather. Like a shot's worth.
So, I mean, how do you handle Tapatio, then?
I feel like Tapatio's not as spicy as that Black Label Valentina.
They're, like, practically the same to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, your tongue.
I guess so. Wow. I didn't think it would be that bad.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. Because I got the other label first, and I was eating that. And that was, like, not spicy
it's
at
ketchup.
All.
Yeah.
But I was comparing the salsa too. Like, I had them all set out. I had the Black Label, I had the regular Valentina, I had the Tapatio, I had the Sriracha. I really wanted a hot sauce kick, the other day, after we talked about it, and I had that delicious soup your mom makes.
Yeah. I wonder what she's going to make today.
God willing. That combo, though.
Welcome to episode 129 of Uncore Gamers. I'm Dan.
And I'm Kurt.
And we are going to talk about games. A little sneak preview. We're going to talk about Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yay.
And Zelda Breath
okay.
of the Wild.
Let's do it.
Our first business. I'm not sure if I mentioned this last time, but it's still on my notes. So I'm going to do it again. Middle-earth Shadow of War has been officially announced.
Mm-hmm.
With the gameplay trailer coming out on the 8th, which is probably when you're going to hear this.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Game's coming out officially August 22nd in North America. And there is a $300 pre-order bundle you can get.
Wow, no way.
Yeah, it comes with a statue and a bunch of other stuff.
Oh!
If it's anything like the Horizon statue, maybe like an orc's head getting cut off.
Oh,
no,
yeah,
it's supposed. I think they actually said what it's going to be. It's supposed to depict a battle, one of the battles in the lore, I guess.
That sounds really, really excellent. I wish it wasn't $300.
Yeah,
I'd pay
right?
maybe two for. Nah, I don't even know about that.
It's like.
Like, honestly, the box sets that I have gotten, which is only a couple of them, they were around like $90 or whatever. Maybe closer to 100.
Yeah, I mean, the Horizon one was 100, and that's actually dope.
Yeah, exactly.
But, they want you to choose between their awesome statue plus Shadow of War or a Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, they're really throwing me for a loop there, because. The Switch gets more and more appealing as the days go on.
It's starting to, yeah. It's definitely starting to. I mean, I have started to hear some complaints. Actually, spend a little bit of time talking about that. So the reviews have come out and stuff like that for the console itself.
Sure.
And obviously a lot of people say, like, you know, it's a jack of all trades but a master of none.
Mm-hmm. I've heard the same.
Yeah, and also the people have been getting some dead pixels. Apparently the screen's been getting really wonky for some people. Like, you just
explain.
So sometimes the screen will just invert itself. Like, it'll flip itself from, like, a top down to down top.
Oh, really?
Also, some people have had experiences where the screen will just go black and white. Orange.
Well, that's not good.
Or orange. Some people have gotten their system bricked already.
Wow.
And, obviously, the Joy-Con, the left Joy-Con, not syncing properly.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody took the controller apart. He says that the problem might have to do with where the antenna is in the controller.
I don't know how you fit anything into that controller, first of all. But I mean, I can imagine with something that tiny, there would be some complications. Not to mention on launch, it being like the, you know, first shipment of the actual consoles. I think maybe after a year or two, once they do a whole new restock and really kind of work some things out, it might be something more desirable to buy. Just on a level of, you know, performance and stuff like that, and no more bugs, hopefully, too.
And plus, I mean, once the second model comes out, it's going to have, like, all these new bells and whistles the first one
didn't. Oh, yeah, and different colors, and they always do the color thing with Nintendo. It's always the color schemes and stuff, which, you know.
And the XL version, so if you want that 9-inch screen.
And the Nintendo Switch 3D.
Yeah.
You know it's coming, dude. You know it is.
Yeah.
Followed by the new Nintendo Switch 3D.
And then a new Nintendo Switch 3D XL.
Yeah. and then, you know, they'll come out with a new Nintendo 3D with replaceable skins.
Oh, well. I can get into that.
Speaking of skins, You know, some of those companies that make the stickers for, like, video game consoles and phones and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
They said don't put any stickers on your Nintendo Switch.
Oh.
They've done some testing. They had, like, I guess 18 Switches they ordered to test their material and stuff like that. Huh. They tried the vinyl adhesives and a couple other ones.
Right.
It, like, messes with the skins. Like, it just messes with it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's like it peels off like the first layer of plastic on the Switch or something like that.
No way.
Yeah, like it's no good. So
I wonder if that has something to do with like the materials they were using for the Switch or these companies that make these vinyl stickers and stuff like that.
I would think it'd be for the Switch because I mean, like, no, I haven't heard any problems with like iPhones or Androids or PlayStations or Xboxes.
Right, right, right.
Or Vitas or none of those. Like, this is the first time I ever heard of anything like this happening with the Switch.
Yeah, I mean, they might have went a little cheaper on, like, the materials. They were using, like, the plastic and, like, maybe even, like, the paint and stuff like that for the Switch console. Because it is a relatively, like, more affordable, cheaper console. They're trying to make more accessible and stuff like that. So that could directly be related to that.
Yeah.
We don't know.
So, I mean, but wait a while. Wait till you hear better reviews from these companies. And, like, one company, can't remember which one it was off the top of my head, straight up came out and said, like, don't do it. Like, we have not come up with a solution to this. And other companies like, oh, we're still testing it.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, like I said, it's been in the back of my mind, of course, because that's this brand new thing. But I feel like a lot of that just to do with novelty and, like, being like, oh, I want it too. It's so new and cool looking. But, yeah, I can hold off.
Yeah. Also, apparently all the controllers, the Pro Controller and, like, the Joy-Con controllers have been confirmed to work with PC and Mac.
Oh, wow.
So, the world of adult motion control games are alive and well.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. Guess what that HD Rumble is really going to be used for, I mean.
Yeah.
Let's not lie. That's what people are most interested in. Alright. PlayStation Plus. March free games.
All right.
Are out. They're live. This is what you can pick up. See, for your PS4, you can get Disc Jam.
Disc Jam, okay.
It's like tennis, but with frisbees.
Okay.
But like, you know, 80s video games, everybody's like a superhero type of thing, right?
Interesting. Never heard of it.
It was hugely popular. No, that was Windjammers.
Very similar names.
Very similar concept. I think Disc Jam's the more 3D version.
Oh.
But otherwise, they're pretty much the same game.
Gotcha. So that's...
That's PS4. PS4. Okay. Tearaway Unfolded.
Okay.
You know, so if you like Little Big Planet,
mm-hmm.
you'll like Tearaway. And Tearaway's more 3D open world. Not open world, but more 3D. Kind of like, you know, like Crash Bandicoot of Yore and stuff like that, or Spyro the Dragon.
I see. Yeah. That's interesting, because last month's was Little Big Planet 3, the free game for PS4.
Yeah, you're right. Medium Molecule games.
Yeah. Which I need to actually go back. I've actually never played a Little Big Planet game.
Oh. Riddle will play them with you.
Yeah. They seem pretty fun.
She loves playing those games with people. Yeah, they are pretty fun, actually. And if you have a... You can do, like, 4 players, I think, per game. And you can do mix and match between, like, 2 players at your house and, like, 2 players online, or 2 players like at my house and 2 players at your house.
Nice. What else we got for the free games?
For PlayStation 3, you can get Under Night In Birth, which okay. I think is a visual novel.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure on that one. Earth Defense Force 2025. Who doesn't love some mindless bug killing?
Yeah, that sounds like some Helldivers right there. That's what that sounds like. Or pretty close to it, anyway.
Yeah, it's like you're a soldier in all those cheesy Japanese like monster movies where you're getting attacked by swarms of ants and spiders and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like blowing them away with rocket launchers, and it's just super cheesy.
Neat.
And multiplayer, so there you go. Sounds fun. Lumo for the Vita, also available on the PS4. I'm going to assume that's a puzzle game. Sounds like it would be a puzzle game. And for the Vita, I think this is the... Obviously, Tearaway Unfolded and Severed, I think, are the two biggest titles. Because, Severed's for the Vita. And Severed is Drinkbox Studios, Guacamelee, Tale of Bob. It was the last game they came out with for the Vita. And that game is sick. It's a first-person dungeon crawl, and you do combat with the touchscreen. Oh, pretty much the whole game's practically run with the touchscreen almost, but This is a really good game.
Nice. Makes me want a Vita.
Yeah, you should get a Vita. I know, like,
I bet Vita's, they're, like, really affordable now, too, huh?
You can probably find them for, like, $100. Yeah.
Wow.
You can get, like, a PlayStation... No, just get the Vita. So you can get a PlayStation TV, but it doesn't have a touchscreen, so it's not as good. You won't be able to play everything.
Gotcha.
But I don't know. I think there's... To me, as a person that diversifies their gameplay styles,
mm-hmm.
it's a very... it was a very good system. I have a bunch of games on there still. I have a bunch of games I haven't even started yet.
Are they actively making games for the Vita still?
In Japan. Sony, not so much. Mm. But, like, you know, the Atlases and all those.
Right, Xyz. Yeah. I would imagine so, yeah, those companies.
Like, I'm getting Bloodstained on the PS4 and on the Vita.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah. I think I'm just getting PS4.
Yeah, I think probably. Yeah. I paid a little bit extra because I was like, I'm going to want that game on the go.
Yeah, I don't think I got as high of a tier in the Kickstarter as you did, but I remember at the last minute going up to, like, I think the $75 one or the $50 one to get, like, the steel case, if I'm not mistaken.
You might be able to get two versions then. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Well,
it's been a while since I did that. They would have asked you,
so. Yeah. Yeah, but the soundtrack and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. God.
It's going to be good.
Every time I get that email every month, I'm like, oh, what is it now? New monster designs? Cool.
I know. They're actually pretty extensive little updates. And there's always like a funny picture of Iga-san at the end, like, drinking a glass of wine or something, or, like, making a funny pose.
Yeah.
And some pretty sweet fan art, too, actually.
Actually, I have another game I kickstarted. Can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. It's, like, a little 16-bit dungeon crawl.
Mm-hmm.
Where you, run a shop during the day, so you go down in the dungeon, collect items, and you sell them in the shop to be able to buy better stuff.
Gotcha.
And rinse and repeat. Yeah, I only put like $15, enough for a digital copy, but looking forward to that one.
Developers too. That you had known beforehand, or just something you saw that looked fun?
No, it's part of the, you know, Square Enix has been doing that, like, spotlight on indie developers.
Oh, okay.
So I saw it off of that.
Gotcha.
I was like, oh, this game actually looks pretty good, and these people, you know, they had enough already set up to give me a little bit more faith. You know, a lot of Kickstarters would be like, oh, here's our game concept. Here's some, like, sketches
and blueprints and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, but they already had sprite animations and stuff like that. Oh, set wow. up. So okay. I was like, all right, I can get behind this.
Yeah.
There's enough there for me to think that this is an actual thing. And they've been doing a pretty good job with their updates, too. Actually, they did, like, a 30-minute gameplay demo recently.
Wow.
Because they were at PAX East or something like that, or Indiecade or something. I forget which one.
I'm interested to see. They got to show me that at some point.
Oh, yeah. I still got the email. I can pull it up for you when we're done.
Nice.
But that game looks pretty good.
That's cool, man.
All right. Let's see. Xbox has got some free games for March 2.
Uh-huh.
Let's, like, rattle those off. Project Cars. Starting... This is the thing that wears me out with Xbox. They stagger it. So they're just doing it at the very beginning of the month, like Sony does.
Mm-hmm.
So from February 16th... All right. So it's already available. Project Cars, which is a pretty big racer. Layers of Fear, March 1st.
Wow.
Evolve, on the 16th. Borderlands 2 started already.
Nice.
Heavy Weapon on the 16th. And that's your free games for March.
Pretty solid.
Yeah. Some good ones in there. So the controller, the Pro Controller on the Nintendo Switch.
Yes.
Apparently has, like, little secret messages, little secret message for the people to buy it. Now, if you look at one of the little, like, lip of one of the analog sticks,
mm-hmm.
there's, like, a little thing, like, right under, like, the bevel. And I can't remember exactly what it says, but it's something along the lines of, like, thanks for gamers or gamering or something like that.
Thanks for gamering.
Like, it's, like, really weird. It's kind of like, it's like a mix of, like, leet speak and, like, broken English.
Okay.
So it's a weird little thing, but it basically is, like, thanks for gaming on or something like that.
Yeah, I wonder why they would include that.
Because you spent, like, $70 on the controller?
Yeah. It seems kind of essential, like, if you were going to buy one, honestly. I mean, if you don't have the Pro, it's ridiculous how like cramped your hand's gonna get using that tiny little thing.
Yeah, it's that thing is even
like I haven't even actually played it. I just watched you guys play the other day when you came over, but
yeah, no, like he has, you know, it comes with that little thing you can put both the Joy-Cons in to make a regular controller, but even that's kind of small.
Yeah, looks like it.
Like it's, I feel like my phone on portrait mode is, yeah, my phone on portrait is definitely wider. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that'd be sad.
So, Mads Mikkelsen, he's playing, the villain for Kojima's new game.
Yes, Death Stranding. Yeah.
So Kojima went over the script and the story with him.
Mm-hmm.
He said the plot is so elaborate, he got lost.
Really?
Yeah.
That sounds like a Kojima thing.
It sounds very much like a Kojima thing. Yeah, there was like a part where like, I guess I talked to your phone and...
Yeah, when I heard he had been added to the cast and then saw like the little trailer they had released for it where he's actually, you know, in the sewers there, and like that was a pretty cool reveal. That's three major real life acting talents that are going to be implemented in that game. It makes it very exciting because you got Norman Reedus, you got Mads Mikkelsen,
yeah,
you got Guillermo del Toro, who's not an actor, but he's a film director, and he's very much...
And he has a very small part. He's already mentioned that. He's not very involved in that game, though.
Yeah. But still there.
Still there, yeah. And he's probably going to be more involved as time goes on, you know, as his schedule frees up.
Yeah, I would say so. Like,
he's going to get more involved. It's just how much they love working with each other.
I actually follow Norman Reedus on, like, Instagram and stuff, and I saw him post a picture, like, the other day where he had a Kojima Productions sweater on, and I was like, oh, I got all excited, because I realized, it slipped my mind. I was, like, not even thinking about Death Stranding, because of all the new games out, and so, again, it just reminded me of Death Stranding, and I just got uber excited again.
You think it'll be out by next year?
I hope so. I would imagine so.
I mean, because he's starting from scratch, essentially. I mean, he's got...
Yeah, but dude, if you saw that, like, studio tour they did on, like, they posted on IGN and stuff like that thing is, like, they're up and running, man. Like, he isn't wasting any time, so... I'd imagine he'd want to get something, you know, his IP out as fast as possible to really just, you know...
Yeah, I mean, that partnership with Guerrilla was huge, because not only did they give him the program,
mm-hmm.
but the also, engine. Yeah, the engine, but also, like, I think, like, half of his staff, like, they gave him the place to work... Like, half of his staff, I think, is Guerrilla key members, stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, it really just, like, jump-started his implementation.
It seems like a great fit to those two companies together. They seem very, like, much willing to work together, and it's not really necessarily about, like, deals, as mm-hmm. far as, like, business-type stuff goes. It's more about, like, just, like, the passion to want to work together. I think those guys both respect the hell out of each other, and that's really exciting.
Yeah, you think this is enough of a push to... keep Kojima in the PlayStation circle?
I mean, what do you mean?
Because he's a free agent.
Yeah.
He's a free agent right now. Obviously, Sony wants to... Anybody really wants to, like, all right, lock him down as sure. much as they can.
Yeah, I understand. It depends on how things work out with Sony, I think, and if they can continue to, like, provide him with just the, you know, the amount of time he needs and just like and freedom and stuff too, because he's very much a creative kind of juggernaut that is just really kind of does his own thing all the time, and like, you know, we were just talking about, like, he makes things very, very weird, and like if you don't let him do what Kojima wants to do, like, he's probably gonna just dip on you.
Yeah,
so we'll see what happens. I sure hope so, though.
So Destiny 2 is still trucking along. And Bungie's confirmed what's going to transfer over.
Let's hear it.
All right, so you have to reach a certain level. There's a reach a certain point. Let's see here. So you have to hit level 20 and complete the Black Garden mission.
Okay.
So very basic vanilla stuff. If you haven't done that, you must have just picked up the game.
Yeah, really.
They plan to award veteran accounts with the Destiny 1 accomplishments. So basically, your character itself will transfer over. Class, race, gender, face, hair, and marking selections. And that's about it.
Oh, wow, okay.
So weapons, I think like the stuff you paid for, like the dance moves, might.
The dance. I almost forgot about the stupid dance moves.
Right. Actually, no, they won't. The dance moves won't transfer over.
So you pretty much just get in your shell, not really your accolades or your attributes or gear or much of anything else. It's just the character that you named and kind of crafted,
like the power,
cosmetically, I guess. Well, that's, which is, to me, is fine. I mean, if I'm gonna pick up Destiny 2 at all, it's gonna be on the PS4 anyway.
Yeah,
and I only ever played on 360 Destiny, you know, game one, year one. So I'd be starting all the way over again anyway. Doesn't really matter, but that I could see how that would be, you know, sort of frustrating to certain people that are just Xbox specific Destiny players or PS4, you know, specific players that have worked up so much and built this character like just so high, then they don't want to get to transfer that over to the whole new game. But
I'm okay with it personally. I feel like they painted themselves into a corner with their weapon balance.
Yeah.
Like, the Gjallarhorn became a beast at the very start of the game, right. And, like, they cut it out and, like, completely, like, nullify the game. Like, it's not getting any more updates and upgrades into the newer versions, and they finally did it for the last update. And, like, alright, we're bringing Gjallarhorn back. And it's a beast again. Like, they can't... The weapon model they've made is too... They can't deal with it, it feels like. Feels like they set up their hierarchy and they're like, well, this is too powerful. What do we do? Make other things more powerful. Yeah, but it doesn't work as good as the one that is powerful. Mm-hmm. So, like, new weapons and just having them just start from scratch, I think it's just better in a sense.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what is going to change as far as even just, like, how the engine operates and, like, kind of, like, you know, cool new supers that you can get, classes even. I'm sure there's going to be all that stuff. And then, you know, it's Bungie. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. Maybe a in-game party system, because everybody jumped down their throat for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And all the, like, the micro purchases are going to be back and stuff. So.
More dance moves.
Oh, yay.
More elaborate dance moves. Maybe some gun-toting dance moves, you know, so I can just take a couple shots and blow my guns.
There you go.
I'm still not going to pay money for that, though.
Not a chance.
So No Man's Sky's getting an update.
No way.
Yeah.
I just sold it.
Oh. It's getting land-based vehicles so you can explore planets better.
Oh.
Let's see what
they... It was an impulse buy, like I told you last time, I think, but I was just like, you know, it came out and got all this hype and stuff, so I decided I'd pick it up because I had a bunch of extra money laying around. I got my fun out of it, but I just, you know...
Did you ever actually beat it?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think I have the patience for that game.
I think you can, like, beat it, like, in 10 hours if you just, like, beeline it straight to the center.
I definitely know it's possible. I think my housemate actually did that. And he hasn't played it since.
Yeah, reasonable.
Yeah.
So this is a quote they put out. Let's see here. To those of you who have spent time sharing feedback, whether positive or negative, we're listening. This is the next step in our journey. It shows a path forward. We hope you'll join us. So, I mean, it does sound like they are planning to add a bunch more to this game.
Yeah.
You know, basically, essentially, free DLC because we can't make you pay for it.
Right. I feel like they probably owe that to the audience.
Yeah.
Consumers.
So it'll be pretty interesting, like... There's always that question, like, should, like, you know, the Steam green light and stuff like that, should you be allowed to purchase a game before it's done? And, you know, clearly this game is probably could be considered in that same vein of, like, this is kind of like a green light game.
Yeah.
Should it have waited till it was done? Oh, hey, Charles got back to me.
Oh, good, good.
Hopefully he can get here and we can talk about that Switch.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to hear his input more on about, like... I think he's had it some more hours with it.
Yeah.
It'd be
interesting to see what more Hello Games can actually even put into the game. So I don't even know how that works. Like, how do you... Can you add in, like, multiplayer and, like... stuff like that, and being able to see other players, can you add in like all these different buttons? Like, how much can you actually change in the game after it's published?
Right.
It's a weird. I guess everything, right? Because you just change the code, and it changes the code, and it's weird.
Conceptually, I don't see it being like a tough thing for them to do. But I just, on a level of like someone who want to play that game for a certain amount of hours and then kind of have my fun with it and like decided to kind of leave it alone, I don't really know what that game needs necessarily, like, to make it better, at least for me personally, because this is all my opinion.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if I was a more involved audience member of that game, like, I could offer my, you know, my 2 cents, but I can't really, because I'm kind of like just done with it.
Yeah, I think to me, like, the only thing, I think the big thing that was missing for me was just the diversity of biomes.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree there. The mining was a little bit tedious.
Yeah, monotonous, tedious.
When you find like the giant stones of gold or like titanium or whatever, you'd sit there and you'd go for it, and then the gun would exhaust, and it would overheat and stuff. And there were these little pixels floating in the air where a piece of the mine.
I just had to get it.
It was, that's probably just something to do with me personally, but that always bugged me a little bit. Because I was like, I mean, what is this? Is this a Nintendo 64 game or something? Like, why is that little piece just still hanging out of it? Let's get it out of there. Come on. Just little, like, cosmetic things like that, I think, kind of, like, bugged me a little bit. Not so much that it made me want to stop playing that. That wasn't the reason. It was just, it seemed a little bit unfinished, like you were saying. Unpolished. Or maybe that's the style they were going for. I'm not even entirely sure. I don't know too much about the company itself.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was sort of an impulse buy, so that's...
Like, I think it would be great. Like, I never came across an ice planet, you know? We got, like, Pluto and stuff like that.
Planet of ice, so metal.
Why aren't there more planets like the ones in our solar system, for crying out loud?
Yeah.
There should be, like, a giant gas planet where you can, like, everything's, like, super fuzzy. It's hard to see in front of you. And, like, an ice planet where I can, maybe I look down at my feet and I can see, like, fish going underneath me and I can't get to them.
That's one thing I can say about the design that I definitely... didn't really enjoy. Like, I thought that the different alien races that you came into contact with, like, were really, like, cool looking, but as far as, like, the creatures that were on the planet, it's like, I don't know, they all seem kind of, like, jiggly and weird and, like, just, I mean, they are aliens, let's not mistake ourselves, but the whole thing, color palette wise too, just seemed a little bit too, like, almost like Dr. Seuss for me a little bit, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I felt like, I know they were going for that kind of whimsical type of approach, but I think it could have looked a little more realistic to what you would see in actual space or something. At least some of the planets or some of the galaxies and stuff. It seemed kind of like it was too much its own thing. A little bit too self-indulgent on their part. In my opinion. IMO.
Right, let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on.
So DayZ, the creator of DayZ.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've heard of it.
Heard of it? Zombie survival. Never played it.
Based off of the Arma games.
I'm pretty picky when it comes to my zombie survival horror games.
Last of Us.
Love that.
Technically not zombie, but
yeah, pretty close. But anyway.
So they were working on a game with Microsoft. It's going to be a Microsoft exclusive called Ion.
Ion.
I don't know if you ever heard of it.
I can't say I have, honestly.
Well, it's supposed to be an MMO. Which not surprising because, you know, DayZ is an MMO essentially.
Sure.
But both parties have confirmed they were working on it with the. So it was, the two companies are called Improvable and Rocket Works.
Mm-hmm.
And they've recently have both confirmed that the game is canceled.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why so?
Apparently, it was supposed to be co-development. But, I guess, like, let me see which company. Yeah, so Dean Hall, the main guy, moved back to New Zealand from London, first of all. And Rocketworks started working on a bunch of other games. So it looks like they just kept putting it on the back burner and stuff like that. And so it just kind of became a thing where it's like, well, you know, we're not going to make it and you're not making it, so... I guess it's canceled.
Right. How far along were they into development as far as like really having everything in place? Or I don't know if you even necessarily said that in the article or anything, but... seems kind of lame to just give up on it. I mean, I don't know if it was a funding thing or if it was a creative difference. Or...
I mean, yeah, this thing was announced in 2015.
Wow. God, it had to be pretty far along then.
I don't know. Wow. It's just like another exclusive that Microsoft has had canceled. It's like the third one in like 2 months now.
What were the other two?
Scalebound got canceled.
No.
And I can't remember what the other one was.
That's interesting.
Plus they shut down Lionhead, so like their Fable game was canceled last year, I think.
Oh no.
So they've had a couple of issues with their exclusives coming out lately. So hopefully E3 they'll like, yeah, we got that all handled, here's all the great games.
Right.
You're gonna wanna play now. Trudy might not be able to come down. His driveway, because he lives on a very slanted driveway.
Yeah, I remember.
So this one of his neighbors called somebody to remove a tree.
Oh wow.
That had fallen over, and they sent a crane.
Oh.
And it just destroyed the driveway.
No way.
So now like the neighborhood's kinda like trying to get the company to pay for a new driveway because it's like a $6,000 fix. They had somebody take a look at it.
Wow.
And the company's like, no, it's not our fault. You should have a better driveway. I'm like, dude, it's a tree. You should have sent some guys in a truck with like a couple chainsaws.
Yeah, really.
And, like one wood chipper, a couple chainsaws, an afternoon's day of work.
That is overkill, like a crane. That's for like building skyscrapers and stuff. Why are you... Oh, man. this is Monterey County we're talking about.
It is? Yeah.
Oh, God.
it's not Monterey County. It's the company. It's the logging company or whatever. But what, a Davies or whatever? That you've seen those trucks around, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Jeez.
So crying for crying out loud.
So he literally can't back out of his driveway. Or, like, I mean, come down the driveway.
He can come up and down, but, like, I guess another truck came by today and, like, just chewed it up even more. So it's kind of like... It's getting trickier. He might have to like move some of the pavement out of the way and stuff like that.
That's insane, dude.
It really is.
What the heck?
Yeah, I mean, he's still been going up and down because he's been going to work, as far as I know.
Well, you got to, yeah.
Yeah,
it's probably not good for the tires.
Yeah, probably not.
Oh boy. Well, more time to play the Switch, I guess, for Charles. Oh man.
Maybe we'll get him on the phone or something.
Yeah, there we go.
So Sega has acquired Crytek.
Crytek.
Yep.
Okay.
And Black Sea, looks like. So obviously Crytek makes amazingly beautiful games, right? They made Crysis, they made Robson the Journey for VR and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're known for making like gorgeous games. What they are also have been known for recently is not paying their employees.
Oh wow, really?
So it makes sense that they have probably put themselves up for sale. Sega picked them up.
Uh-huh.
Sega's a bit of a powerhouse. Sega's has Atlus. Obviously, Sega has Sega. Whether you love it or hate it, Sega does make the Yakuza games.
Mm-hmm.
They make the Valkyria Chronicle games. They make a lot of good games.
They do?
Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, Sonic has been hit or miss lately. Mostly miss.
Goes without saying a little bit.
But they still put out some like top-tier quality games, stuff like that. They picked up Atlus.
So yeah, that's a huge
one. That's huge. And now they picked up Crytek. So now they have that powerhouse of a system to like make their games look even better.
Man, I really wish Sega would make another console. Have they talked about it at all?
No. I think it's just it's like a loser's market. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, really, the console is a platform for you to sell your games.
Yes. True.
Because you know, most companies, except for Nintendo, don't make money on it. And even Nintendo making money on it sometimes makes you wonder, like. Could you have sold that $50 cheaper? It made me need to buy it instead of get it later.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's a brutal market for sure, and I guess Sega probably would maybe benefit more just from, you know, releasing games, selling them to other platforms and whatnot.
I think the only benefit from having the console is you get the control. Like, you're not paying extra fees to the manufacturer of the console and stuff right, like that exactly. For the rights to play it on there and stuff like that. You get a little bit more control of where the money goes, I guess.
Yeah.
But bring some more games to PS4. How about more Valkyria Chronicles? Damn it, so good. Do you ever, have you ever played that?
I have not played any of the Valkyria Chronicles games.
They did a HD remaster of the PS4 one. You into like tactical games, like?
Not as much. Or maybe I would be. I just haven't really given any a shot, like the Advance Wars stuff and like Advance Fire Wars. Emblem and all that stuff.
It's a bit of a hybrid because like you have your map and it's not grid based or anything like that. So you can move your pieces. You have so many turns per round, and you can move like one, you can use all those turns on one character. Mm-hmm. To move them into like the perfect position, have them take out a bunch of people, but you move in actual like third person, up to your movement limit and stuff like that, and you can take a shot, and like you do that like all in first person and stuff like that, like or third person, and like the entire time you're in action, mm-hmm. the enemy team can take shots at you, and your team can take shots at enemies that are moving around and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
So it's nice. It gives you more agency with your units, I guess.
Cool. Well, do you think it'd be a good one to start with if I was trying to get into that genre?
It's not the easiest.
No. I don't imagine it would be.
But it's fun. I mean, like, I have it on PS3 if you want to check it out at some point.
Yeah.
But it's like cel shaded, but like watercolor cel shaded.
Oh, cool.
The game
looks nice.
Beautiful, even on the PS3 and stuff like that. I can only imagine how much better they can make that look on the PS4, but
yeah.
And it's like it's basically it's like a World War I setting type of thing almost. So it's just a good game. Yeah.
Cool.
Definitely check it out. Like, yeah, if you ever want to come over just to try it out for a couple hours or something like that, I think it'll get its teeth into you.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's. Let's talk some Horizon Zero Dawn.
All right. You know,
the game came out. I played a good, I want to say, 5 hours.
Okay.
Not as much as I want to, but I will say that it is a game where maybe, 10 o'clock, and I'm like, all right, I'll play a quick hour of it, get some stuff done, and then it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And I say, well, I should sleep because of work. Right?
You kind of have to second guess yourself a little bit, yeah.
The game is fun. The game is beautiful. I can't believe that game is so photorealistic. And like, not the characters, but in the scenery. Like, there are times, like, I've been walking around and I'm just like, talking to Riddle and stuff like that. I'm just like, dang, Riddle's like, I remember. Riddle's watching me play, right? I can't play the story without her in the room. She won't allow me. She needs to see how the story plays out.
Oh, okay.
That's fine. I plenty of side quests for me to do when she's not
oh,
here.
Oh, yeah.
But I was walking around, just, you know, casually walking and kind of looking around the environment and stuff like that. And she's like, oh, yeah, you want to go hiking? I'm like, why? I'm hiking in
the
game.
We are hiking right now.
Yeah.
Look at the screen.
Like, it looks like pictures you see of, like, Yosemite or, like, some other national park and stuff like that. That's what the game looks like. It's,
yeah, it's
ridiculous.
Totally. I've been trying to keep myself, like, my housemates playing it now too, and I watched you play it a little bit that first day that you had it and stuff, but I'm trying my best to stay away from it because I want to play it for myself as well. But what I have seen, absolutely gorgeous, and on top of that, plenty to do.
Yeah.
Of course.
Lots to do. It doesn't feel as overwhelming, at least not yet, as like other games, open world games, stuff like that, where you have like 80 side quests and stuff like that, plus the main quest, and you have a map that's like the size of like England or something like that.
Right. There's something to be said about the pacing too, of
yeah.
what in which they release the side quests and things like that. Like, I feel like in Final Fantasy 15, for example, you got to, you know, your one first big area, and literally every person standing around had a side quest for you to do, and all these map points start jumping up, and all these little question marks and like little treasure chests and stuff, and there was just, it did feel a little overwhelming at first.
Yeah, and this one even like I haven't completed the first like main story segment, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the little story chain before it tells, you know, like games will have, you know, like, you know, for instance, Final Fantasy 15, right? Like, the
yes.
first story segment is like, oh, get to Gwaldin Quay so you can take a boat. And this one, I haven't done to that part. where, like, I've gone to Golden Quaid and the story switches, like, oh, this has happened now.
Right, the tiny, like, the first arc, basically, of the story.
So I haven't finished it, but I have done, you know, like, you do fight humans in that game, and I've done a couple of those fights and stuff like that.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
And I have done some, like, pretty, like, a boss fight, so to speak, of one of the robots and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just intense. Like, that actually, the first boss fight, where, like, I was kind of trapped in the room, and they had, like, little mob swarms would keep popping in, and there's one big dinosaur thing.
Sure.
And being trapped in that room, and, like, because I couldn't hide, I had to actually, like, use all my skills and stuff like that.
Right.
Made that game pretty... Really... The game gives you an overconfidence of, like, strength, I guess.
Gotcha.
Especially in the beginning, right? Which makes sense. Stuff like that. Depending on your skill level, I guess, because I find aiming the bow pretty... I do a pretty good job of that. I know some people could struggle, because there's no aim assist. You aim the bow well or you don't, right?
Gotcha.
And then that being your main weapon and stuff like that. Okay. But you do get more weapons, and there seems to be, like, a variety of weapons. I haven't, like, played with one yet. It's not like you unlock the weapons, they'd be able to use weapons. You know, you go to a merchant, and he has weapons, and you just buy them.
Cool.
And the game's like, oh, try doing this, and I'll give you some XP if you can do it. And that's your tutorial system, right?
Okay, I understand. Yeah.
But, like, there's, like, a slingshot. There's a, and, you know, you've seen the trailer's little thing where you do the wire traps.
The trip wires.
The trip wires, yeah. There's, obviously, there's different types of bows that do slightly different things. And there's one that I haven't tried out yet, but it basically sounds like a shotgun.
Oh, cool.
The description is that you shoot, like, mini projectiles for when accuracy isn't important. Pretty much sounds like a shotgun. And I know, like...
You get a nice spread out of that.
Yeah. I feel like there was one commercial or trailer or something like that where, like, it looked like you had, like, a minigun.
Oh, okay.
Stuff like that. So, that's pretty fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I don't remember where I was going with it. I'm just enjoying talking about it.
Yeah, I like I said, I can't wait to play either. It's just that, like, I'm kind of just waiting on it because I have so many other games that I'm playing at the moment.
Yeah,
and I really want to not let it go by the wayside and, like, be, like, kind of half-heartedly playing it. I really want to, like, that to be my main jam when I do sit down to play it.
Yeah, it's definitely a game of the year contender for sure.
That's awesome.
Like, and, like, I haven't been able to play a lot over the weekend, stuff like that. I had a pretty busy week, but yes. I'll pop in for like 20-30 minutes and I'll get a couple quests done. Like, it's enough stuff of a short supply or a short not supply but enough there's enough content that you can do quickly that make you feel like you keep progressing,
right?
So, which is nice too, because a lot of these open world games sometimes will have like missions that you're like, it's a side quest mission but it's gonna take you like 2 hours to do it. And, like, you don't feel like you have... You feel like you have to dedicate time with it. Whereas Horizon is easy enough to just jump in for 20, 40 minutes. Feel like you got a decent amount of work done.
I like the sound of that. It's an open-world game where it also has, like, pick-up-and-play kind of, like, capabilities as well.
Yeah.
And you can sit there and play before you realize it's 4 in the morning. Or you can pop it in for, you know, 45 minutes before you have to go to work or something. And still get as enriching of an experience out of both types of or durations of gameplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. They really nailed it, I think, from what it sounds like.
Yeah, and you don't jump off of things that are too tall. Like, if you think you would hurt yourself jumping off it in real life, you will probably cause damage to your main character in the game.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I'll keep that in mind. We found out the same in Zelda, actually, too, when we were playing that the other night. Like, there was... I died quite a few times just jumping off. I mean, I was pretty high up, actually, to be honest, but
yeah,
even a couple times I wasn't necessarily that high, and I didn't die completely, but I did take a lot of damage. I'm still messing around with those 3 heart containers, because there's, you know, not heart pieces in this game or anything, so...
Anyway. Yeah, let's cut into that. So you have Zelda Breath of the Wild. You're playing that on your Wii U.
Yeah, on the Wii U, yes. Mm-hmm. Similar to the amount of time you've played Horizon, I've probably played for about 4 to 5 hours of it. I also had a busy kind of weekend kind of deal. I plan on going home after we finish up the pod and playing a lot more of it. I'm talking to a buddy of mine that bought it, my buddy Joseph, And he lives down in LA, so we've just been texting about it and stuff. But every like few hours or so over the past couple of days since he's got it, he'll text me, dude, this is amazing. Dude, I just found this. Hey, you know what's really crazy? How big Zelda is. Like, he'll just like be like saying things like that to me. And I'm like, dude, I know. Like, it sounds so great. I need to get back to playing it. So far, I love it. I think it's excellent. The one thing that I would say as far as it being like a next generation kind of console game is that it could, I think, operate a little bit smoother. I've actually experienced some lag quite a few times, even in areas that weren't necessarily chock full of a lot of rich detail or anything like that.
Remember Charlie told us that, like, based off things he's read online, like reviews he saw, that the Wii U version ran a little bit better.
Yeah, I remember him telling me that, and I could see how that's true. But I feel like there probably is an update coming for it soon, based on that kind of deal, because it's happened quite a few times to me, and it actually kind of messed with my combat in one moment, and I got killed like in an encounter with more than one enemy around me,
right?
Or the frames drop and it just lagged. And before I knew it, I was dead. So that was a little bit like disconcerting a little bit. But I don't imagine it's going to be a constant problem, but it has happened a little bit. So that's my one complaint about it, I would say. But as far as just, you know, pickup and playability, like just how like fresh it feels for being a Zelda game, but also with plenty of callbacks to the other Zelda games, and the voice acting, I love that too. The first big reveal, I'm not going to say anything too much, but we find out kind of like where the big first kind of story prologue thing comes in, like that is really cool. The idea of Ganon being this kind of reimagined sort of cosmic force almost in the universe, not as much of an embodiment of evil, is really cool too. I'm interested to see like where the story goes with that. And yeah, just overall, like design wise, man, it's really cool. Like I think they hit you know, hit the nail on the head, knocked it out of the park. I can't wait to play more of it. And, you know, if I come back on next week or the following week, I can definitely share more with you. But at this point, I have only played about four or five hours of it, so.
Okay. Now, how do you feel about how spread out things are? Because remember when I was watching you play, it felt like you could run, like, a pretty decent amount of time without technically really running into anything.
Yeah, I mean, especially in that first area, you know,
the plateau or whatever,
the Great Plateau. Yeah. It was pretty large, but of course there is, you find out from the wandering old man that you encounter in the first,
the old creeper,
the first few minutes of the game there, that you can't get down to the lower valley where the real kind of land of Hyrule is at, because you don't have the glider. So as far as the Great Plateau goes, yeah, there is quite a bit to explore, but it's pretty confined, actually. You get your basic one forest, you get the little meadow, you got a small lake, and then you got the two towers that have, like, not the towers, but you have the shrines, yes, that have the trials attributed to them. And then you have, like, the mountain that is, like, the cool, and that gives you your first experience with your, like, elemental, or not elemental, but environmental challenges. Yeah. Like, on the mountain, you have a really cold, snowy atmosphere where if you don't, you know, make some kind of food item or light a torch to take with you, you'll very quickly die because it's taken a huge effect on you.
Okay.
And we saw that in the past too, Zelda games, where, you know, putting on the different tunics, like, oh, you're in the fire temple, put on the red tunic, you'll be invulnerable to. Not as much of that in this game. You don't really get invulnerable. It just kind of
resists it
a bit, which is interesting because it is making everything a lot more, well, I mean, challenging, and kind of it requires you to figure things out a little bit more, as opposed to like older installments in the franchise, I would say. Where it held your hand a little bit, you know, earlier on.
Yeah, I've heard this kind of like a return to form to like the original Zelda and stuff like that, to the Breath of the Wild. Because like I've heard that this game, one of the, I don't know how widespread it is, but a controversy I've seen online is Horizon has like a Metacritic score of 95,
right?
Where Zelda is like a perfect 100. Everybody's giving Zelda 10s, right?
Okay.
And there's been a lot of like some people throwing some some shit around, you know, complaining about, like, oh, how come Zelda gets a perfect 10 and Ryzen gets, you know, like a 93 or 94 or whatever the score was or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's one of the big, I guess, details that, I guess, people raise Zelda a bit on the higher plateau is that it gives you no directions. You have to make your own map of, you know, like, pinpointing things, and, you know, there's no tutorial, and there's, like, nothing telling you where to go, really, or anything like that.
Yeah, I would say that's very true in some respects. There is basic story points, though, where it's saying, like, oh, you should probably go do this, but it doesn't, like, put an urgency on it where it's like, oh, if you don't go right now, someone's gonna die or something. Like, it's very much like, hey, this person has something to tell you, go do that if you want, but there's so much open space to, and so many intriguing details that you see something and you want to go there. And you know it's off the beaten path.
Yeah.
So that's been exciting too.
Would you say it's more overwhelming knowing that there's so much and not having any guidelines, really?
It is a bit, I would say, yeah. I think the more you're telling me more about Horizon and the way they operate their open world system, it feels a little bit more enticing and kind of easier to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I've been a lifelong Zelda fan and stuff like that, so that hurts me a little bit to say that. That's not what I mean. But that doesn't really get in the way of how much I have been enjoying it on a level of being a pure, like, fan of that franchise and just, like, the overall, like, idea of Zelda and stuff. But I will say, I'm interested to find out why the Metacritic score is higher for games that these two games that seem so similar in so many ways.
Yeah, I mean, I tried reading a couple of reviews.
Like, is Nintendo paying these people off or something? Like, I mean, what's going on here? Like,
probably not. I mean, one, there's a stigma. It's a Zelda game.
Yeah.
Pretty much, like, even Zelda games, I think there's, like, been, like, one Zelda game that hasn't gotten a 10 from, like, most people, and that was right. Skyward Sword, obviously.
Yeah.
But even still, that still got, like, a decent amount of 10s for being the least favorite Zelda game.
I remember, yeah.
But, you know, it's just like, you know, oh, it's a new Zelda game. Let's give it a 10, right? Like, somebody has enough nostalgia for the Zelda franchise.
See, that's
doing the review that it doesn't matter. They're not going to be as nitpicky, right?
See, that would have been my answer, too, is that it holds such a cherished part in so many people's hearts that it's, like, it's kind of hard not to be like, yeah, let's give it a 10, like, because it's just, it is, it has all that appeal to it.
Two, from what I understand, Breath of the Wild is a pretty good game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty universal. Whether people think it's better than Rise or not, they still agree that it's a great game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think three, I think a lot of people are kind of like, I don't play as much open world games. I'm sure you probably don't, as people that review games stuff like that. So I think the concept of this being an open world game is kind of like, literally is a giant sandbox. Go do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not really going to tell you to go do stuff and go explore this or whatever. That's up to you if you want to do it. I think they find that kind of refreshing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Apparently, like, you can just start from the game and just make, like, a beeline practically to the end boss if you wanted to. Like, not even, like, deal with all the story mission. You just go straight to wherever the end boss is and just fight him and probably die and lose. But
oh, yeah.
You could do that if you want to in this mm-hmm. game. It's not the first game that I've played that's done that, but there's not many games that do let you do that.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, based from watching you play, I think the only thing that would really bug the hell out of me in that game is the item breakage.
It has, yeah, that's another small criticism I have of the game as well.
It seems like the UI isn't designed well for that, because, like, in Horizon, you know, you run out of arrows, you run out of your ammunition and stuff like that, and you have to craft more of it. And you just, you hit L1, it takes you to your weapon wheel, you can switch weapons, switch ammo types, and you can just craft from there by holding down X, and it'll just craft it real quick. It slows down the game a bit while you're doing that.
Right.
It's just a quick, easy thing to do with the UI. From what I see, like, every time your weapon broke, you had to, like, pause the game, go into the menu, find which one you want to equip it, and then...
There is kind of a quick weapon wheel type thing. It's not much a wheel, more, it's more of a line.
Okay.
Where you just kind of pick from a line, and it kind of pops up on the screen. And it's in live action, too. You don't have to, like, pause the game. But you can, if you want to get a little bit of break from, like, maybe a horde that's coming at you or something. But I would say that I'm on the same page with you when it comes to that. It has started to bug me a little bit. Only because the durability of most of these early game weapons is so low. Like, you're pretty much finished killing one bokoblin or one little enemy, and it's telling you, oh, your club is badly damaged, and then before you know it, it breaks. And that's right in the middle of combat. And it's just, that has been a little bit frustrating. And then I've found some stronger things since, and like, I've found a really nice bow at the top of this tower and stuff like that. And I'm wondering, like, well, how long is this going to last? Because I want to keep on and hold on to this thing. I don't want it to break.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, at some point in the game, is there going to be, like, a system where you can repair it yourself, like, in a little in-game menu, or can you go to a blacksmith and have it easily reforged, like, for, like, fairly cheap?
Well, I can tell you what I do know about that. Uh-huh. I'm not sure how much further this guy was when he told me about his experience playing the game.
Right.
But he was at a point in the game where he was getting, like, you know, metal swords and stuff like that. And
oh, okay, yeah.
So some better gear, like, and, you know, different, like, armor setups or whatever.
Nice, yeah.
And he was saying, and I was at, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, like, how's the weapon breakage and stuff like that? And he's like, yeah, it never really changes. Shit just breaks.
That's constantly. Okay, that, I don't like hearing that. Yeah. I don't know if I like
hearing that. I asked him, like, oh, like, is there, like, a repair pad or something like that? He's like, not that I've come across.
Wow.
Yeah. So, like, I guess, just find the Master Sword as fast as you can, because I assume that that's unbreakable, I would hope.
Yeah, it's gotta be. Or maybe there is some kind of point you get to also, because I don't know how far this guy was into the game or anything, but I would imagine...
The Goron Mountains, I would imagine. Aren't they, like, the craftsmiths of the Zelda world, the Gorons?
Yeah, definitely. I would say so. Yeah, I hope that there is, at some point, something where you can get a weapon that you can kind of continually use. Like, I could do without, like, you know... But I guess that's where part of the fun comes into, where you have to, you know, really explore and, like, and gather as much as you can and keep your, like, your inventory full, too.
Just... But you can't craft items either, right? Like, you have to find weapons to have a weapon. Can you?
Yeah, see, that much I don't know, actually. I don't have an answer for it.
So your experience, though, you haven't been able to, like, make your own weapons.
No, yeah, my limited experience that I've had with the game so far, I have, no, it's all hunting and gathering.
Like, what about, like, arrows? Have you been able to make any arrows, or is that also something
you have to find? Nope, definitely not crafted it. You either find them in chests or just in encampments, or you could farm arrows by letting an archer from the distance, like, you just run around in circles and let them shoot at you.
The
arrows get stuck in the ground, you can go pick them up.
That's cool.
That is pretty cool. That's one of, like, the kind of the really cute kind of, like, little caveats that I've enjoyed about the game, like, so far. I was like, oh, that is so cool how you can, like, they actually stick it in the ground and you just pull them out. That's mine now. I stick it in your quiver.
Yeah.
I thought that was, like, really cool.
I also did, like, you can climb on anything.
Yeah.
Like, I saw you climb up a tree, and I was like, what the hell? You just climb up a random tree?
Yeah, you, like, knock the apples down and stuff, and the, like, birds come flying out of the tree. And,
like, I saw a video of some guy who was, like, jumping across some, like, a bridge or something, and, like, it was broken. And, like, his jump missed, but he grabbed onto the edge of it. Like, he, like, slid down a bit, he just climbed back up.
Yeah.
I was like, every game should let me just climb on everything.
Yeah, and just the idea of, like, you being able to jump at the press of a button in a Zelda game is pretty cool, too. Like,
that's true. That is true.
That's actually one of the huge things that I almost completely forgot to mention, is, like, that's a pretty cool thing about that game, too. Because, you know, in Zelda games of past, it's always been like, oh, here's the gap, just run at it, and the game is going to jump for you.
Yeah, just hold down the jump button, and it'll do it.
Right.
Yeah.
And at this, you press X, and you can jump literally just standing in one spot if you wanted to.
Nice.
You can also use it to, like, yeah, clear gaps. You can use it to get a little bit of a boost for your climbing. It's just so different and new. So it's been great.
Now, I noticed you've acquired, like... In previous Zelda games, you get items, and that's how you get your power-ups and stuff like that. And, like, it seems like in this one, from what I've seen you play of it, you kind of get, like, an essence of magical ability to use items. It's not like you pick up a glove that lets you throw bombs. You just pick up the magic spell bomb or something like that.
Yeah, you do. I forget exactly what they call it, but you do these trials, the Sheikah trials, or what have you, and you gain these abilities... Where, like, one is, like, a magnesis ability where you can pick up and move large objects. One is to put something in stasis. Some are, like, timed bombs that are either square or round. Some reason that's a thing.
Yeah.
In that game. And so you get all, like, four or five of those powers within the first kind of, like, basically, like, the prologue of the game before you get the paraglider so you can go down into the Valley of Hyrule and stuff. So you're pretty well equipped with, like, some cool magical abilities. Hopefully a good inventory by the time you get there. Like, you should definitely have that. And a pretty sweet bow and a paraglider, which seems, like, pretty essential for that game because a lot of enemies are at range. And in order to, like, infiltrate encampments and really take them down strategically to get the loot that's there, you're probably going to want to get pretty good at using that bow.
So how does that feel, being the big Zelda guy? Because Zelda's always been the sword guy.
Yeah, it's definitely different, almost. Especially because I've only found one sword so far, and it was a rusted broadsword, and it broke, like I said, after the first like few enemies I killed with it, which that was kind of lame. And since then, I've just been picking up random spears and clubs and just using those to just knock people around a little bit.
Picking a rock up and just die.
Yeah, and I mean, you get to a certain point, too, where like you get where I explored down into the valley, and I came across some bokoblins that are riding like horses. There's no way a spear, a little wooden spear, is going to take out one of those guys. You got to come back when you're more equipped with something, or a better types of arrows or something, like get some fire arrows or something, because those guys are fast and lethal, and they can one-shot you. And that's where the lag came into the other day, too, when I was talking about that. So, maybe something about the horsey moving along too fast. And
but I guess that's another big point to bring up with this Zelda. How does it feel playing a weak Link?
Yeah,
pathetically weak Link. Like, he dies at the drop of a hat.
I haven't died so much in a Zelda game in years like that I have playing this from the first 5 hours that I played it. So it's definitely...
I mean, do you like it? Because you got into the Souls franchise, the Bloodborne franchise. A lot absolutely, of people compare it to that and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is this
it's Zelda want? Souls a little bit. Yeah. Not as challenging.
Because you don't lose anything when you die. You just reset, right?
Right. You restart from the last like little save that you had.
That an experience you wanted in your Zelda, though?
I haven't decided if it is or not yet, because so far it's been, like, slightly, like, you know, a nuisance. It's kind of like, well, that's kind of lame or whatever. But I just hope that at a certain point you do, you know, have more of a grasp on the game to where you can, like, kind of easily get through little encounters and stuff like that and not have to worry about, like, oh, this badass sword that I have is going to, like, break right in the middle of, like, a boss battle. Like, that's going to be frustrating. Mm-hmm. I hope that's not the case. Or I hope there's more strategic ways you can take down bosses or large groups and not have to rely on flimsy clubs and spears. So
right,
we'll see what happens. It is an experience that I would say I'm welcome to, but I haven't decided if it's more trouble than it's worth or not, because I haven't played as much of it yet.
So yeah, because we'll I remember watching you a bit, and like you got one-shotted by a blue hobgoblin, which I guess, all right, he's blue, he's going to be tougher, but there's no real way to tell.
Yeah, he had a shield, like a spiked club.
A spiked club. Like, you have to pay a lot more attention to what they're carrying to tell how deadly they are, I guess.
Yeah.
There's no icon to tell you, like, oh, this guy's way above where you are right now.
Yeah, like, he's the captain or something. Yeah. Yeah, it's more like color scheming, which is a very Nintendo thing to do. Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see what happens. Like, I'd like to talk a lot more about it, but I just don't have the experience so far. I wish I did. But it's been good, I can say that. And I would say as of my current like idea of it, if I had to give it kind of like a grade, I would say, yeah, easily like an 8 or a 9 out of 10.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, let's hit up that Encore Gamers question of the week.
Yeah, let's see what we got for that. I think I came up with that one for this week, which was, if you could change one thing about the Nintendo Switch, what would it be?
Damn, dude. Yeah, that should memorize. Did you look it up before you came on?
I did not.
Wow.
I also don't have an answer for it, because I haven't really played the Switch. I really don't have it. I mean, I'll go ahead and offer like what I would change about it, and that would have just been straight up, right off the bat, just more games. More, like, big games.
Yeah.
Because not everybody's a Zelda fan, you know? Like, I'm a Zelda fan. Of course, I would have bought it if I didn't have a Wii U for Zelda. Not everybody's a Zelda fan.
Well, we got
Some people would want a Mario game right off the bat. Some people would have wanted a Wario World game. You know, there's different Nintendo flavors that other people are more into. And that just goes without saying, you know, you want more than two or three games to choose from and a bunch of indie darlings like we were discussing last time. So that would be my one thing.
My one thing.
You actually have played it a bit with Charlie and Sunchi, so...
I have played it a bit. I should talk about that a bit.
Yeah.
I've only played it on handheld mode, obviously, because he came over with it.
Right.
I mean, the screen's fine. The screen looks great. It's a nice screen, 720p, you know, no problems with it.
Mm-hmm.
We did a little two-player and stuff like that, and, like, we did one with a split-screen two-player. It was a Fast RMX.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
And, I mean, part of this is definitely the game's issue, and part of it's kind of the handheld mode version of the system. It's a small screen. It's like a 6.2-inch screen or something like that.
Right.
So splitting that in half is a tiny amount of workable area for you to watch and look at it on your mm-hmm. screen and stuff like that. And that game, it's a high-speed racing game where you can fly off the edge.
Yeah.
And there's, like... They use, like, 5 colors in that game.
Oh, no.
So, like, I'm constantly flying off the edge because I can't see where the edge is. And, you know, they have these giant jumps, and you have to correct yourself in the air to get back on track, stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, I'm good. And then my ship explodes because I landed on the edge of the track. You know, it's kind of like... That game itself needs to add a border.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, Super Bomberman R, you can play that 4 players multiplayer off of one, you know, screen stuff or whatever. And it's a different type of game. It's a different type of multiplayer where you just have the one screen. Everybody just figures out where they are on that screen and
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Moves around the map. It's not a split screen situation for that game.
Yes, yes.
And that works fine. The Joy-Con controllers are super tiny.
Yeah.
I think the problem I just have had with Nintendo hardware is just their button layout.
Hmm.
It's kind of like everything's kind of awkward and you feel it even more with the Joy-Cons when you're sharing it with somebody. Because, like, if you're using both of them, all right, you can kind of, like, you know, somewhat Xbox-y control system setup, right? Askew analog sticks with the buttons on top and below them. But when you share that Joy-Con controller, then somebody suddenly has their analog stick right next to their buttons. And it's really kind of becomes very awkward because they're not spread out evenly between both controllers. And it's just really weird. It's super, like, it becomes really awkward to kind of get that right. I think it's the right one, the really awkward one. Somebody hands you that right Joy-Con, you're kind of like, oh, thanks. I hate you.
That's, yeah, I mean, I just watched you guys a little bit, but from what it seemed like, some games are just going to work better on the mobile version. Some aren't, depending on whether you have a split screen. Or just if you want the experience of something that's that small, like, honestly, like, there's just not everything's going to work on that level.
Yeah.
It's conceptually, it's a cool idea. Like, oh, yeah, we're kind of making, like, a console and a on-the-go thing, and I understand that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's great. Like, oh, you're going to go on the trip? Well, you know, take your entire console with you in the palm of your hand, like, in your hand, you know? And that's cool. I love that idea. The idea is awesome, and it's working. Yeah, you know, like, everything that's released, as far as I know, does that.
Right.
But I think trying to implement the multiplayer into that, it's going to be hit or miss, I think, especially at the beginning and stuff like that.
Absolutely,
yeah. I'm surprised that they even decided to even make that a thing in handheld mode.
Right.
And it's cool that they did. I think it's actually a huge move in comparison to, like, the Wii U, where you had one gamepad, that was it.
Right.
Yeah, like, one person had a completely different experience to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And just the pricing on everything. It's way too expensive.
Yeah,
those controllers need to drop down, like, mad.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing I want to actually just remember. There's one more little piece of information about the Nintendo Switch that has people up in a tizzy right now.
Uh-huh.
You can't transfer things through memory card. So, like, let's say your Nintendo Switch breaks,
mm-hmm.
all your save data, as of this point, they might release a patch sometime addressing this issue, but all your save data, like all that, cannot be put on the memory, on the SD card. So it's gone.
That's terrible.
Right? So, like, I don't know how far that applies. I don't know what their infrastructure is, if your account's tied to your system, because that would be a huge thing.
Right. I'm not sure it is. I'm not sure if there's, like, cloud saves or anything for Nintendo.
Yeah. So, like, don't break your Switch, people. And there are some people that, like, by just docking it and undocking it, they've already scratched their screen.
Yeah, see, that comes back to exactly what we were talking about in the beginning of the episode, is if I'm going to buy one at all, I'm going to wait, because there's too many things upon launch that they need to, like, work out.
Yeah.
Not only with the hardware, but with, like, the software and the way, like, just everything works, honestly.
I guess I gotta come up with a question this week, because you're not you're somewhat regular at this point.
Yeah. I will be back at work by this next week, so there's not necessarily a guarantee that I will come back for next week's episode, but I would like to.
Yeah, anytime. Always welcome. Everybody's welcome. Let's see here. All right. What non-game franchise, and you know, obviously this involves anything that's ever been turned into a game, or that came from a game, whatever. What non-game franchise, whether book, movie, TV show, or something, anything like that, would you like to see as a game?
Okay. So anything else from popular culture that hasn't already been developed as a game?
Or
what would you like to see it turn into, one of those turned into a game?
Exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I think it's pretty open and available for people to come up with lots of different interesting concepts and ideas.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I'm going to want to think about a little more.
Yeah. And before anybody says it, there are plenty of Bible games, and the Bible's already out. Can't pick the Bible. Too many games.
Yeah. I mean, if you start thinking about it, honestly, there is a lot of just books in general that have been made into games and vice versa and stuff too. So you really gotta look into that one before you answer that question, I'd say.
There's also like just a whole bunch, like, you know, most mystery stories, mystery novels, stuff like that, never been the game.
Right.
But they would make good games, I think. You know, the whole, but why aren't there more noir mystery type of games? That is an untapped market. LA Noire tried it, but they also tried some really weird, like, see if the person's lying. I'm like, no, I'm not good at telling if real people are lying. I can't do it in your game either.
Yeah. Right.
But, like, that whole, like, subgenre of noir game and stuff like that, like, those games could be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of those genres that I love a lot, too, and holds a dear place in my heart, that I would like to see a more complete and really kind of true to form version of in game form.
Yeah, you know who I would love to see? Jaeger Studios. I would love to see them tackle that. They did one of my all time favorite narrative games of Spec Ops: The Line.
Okay, yeah.
You heard me talk about it, I'm sure, plenty of times.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think, you know, seeing how they can focus so much on a strong narrative and like be able to put that above gameplay, I think having that chops. Or, like, Naughty Dog. You know, where companies that, like, have proven that, like, yeah, no, they can handle a story. They can have a complicated story and handle it and make it really good.
Yeah.
And even if the gameplay is so-so or, like, not the best, but, like, that story is going to stay stuck in your head, leave an impression and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's what you need for a good noir game.
Yeah, you know, I'd love to see something like that, especially done in VR. Be really cool.
Oh, yeah, you have to actually investigate the crime scenes. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the Batman game.
Yeah, I mean, I got a little bit of that feel when I was playing the Arkham VR thing. I think it'd be great to see more of that type of stuff, detective work, kind of narrative-esque sort of exploration, morality tales and stuff like that in VR form. With a lot of dark shadows and whatnot.
That's going to be episode 129. Thanks, guys, for listening and for sharing it with your friends. Remember, you can catch me, Riddle, and Titan streaming on the Uncore Gamer channel Wednesday through Friday. Presumably, other people are also streaming, but there's been some issues with that lately, and hopefully we can figure out what that is. Or you'll see more of us streaming on other days, if we feel like it.
Keep those notifications turned on, people.
Anything you want to pimp out real quick?
Place
of business? Get some more tips?
No, I think I'll keep that a little discreet. But thanks for listening, guys.